Welcome to the 12th episode of All Things Crypto, an Elk Finance podcast. I'm Shiloh, also known as LT Snake Plissken.
And I am Freed.
So today we're discussing rug pulls, scams, hoodwinks.
Please keep in mind, we are not financial advisors, and this is not a financial advice. If you're looking for a financial advice, please find a licensed advisor in your area.
So really, as we said before, our mission is to really inform users with the Elk Finance podcast and, you know, help people who are interested in crypto. So if we get something wrong, let us know. You can find the Elk Telegram chat at t.me/elk_finance_chat or check our docs at docs.elk.finance for links to the rest of our social media.
Let's just start the questions here. What is a rug pull?
So a rug pull is kind of a term that's painfully familiar to a lot of people involved in crypto, especially willing those willing to dip their toes into decentralized finance. Because anybody can make a token, a great many of them become scams. So in the case of a rug pull, it means that funds that any investor had deposited into a project were stolen, mostly or all of it, usually by the developers of the projects. Think, yeah.
That is low.
It's so low. And think like pulling the rug, getting the rug pulled out from you, which is a saying that some people may not be familiar with, leaving you kind of to fall on your butt. But usually this is done really quickly nowadays. You know, often a few hours to a few days after a, you know, so-called project, if you can call it that, after it launches, you know, they'll find ways to kind of take all of your hard-earned crypto and run away with it. And you'll hear a lot about these in the media. They love to talk about how not great DeFi and crypto is. Don't let it discourage you. You can be cautious, and we're going to talk about a few ways to avoid them. So we'll get into that.
So what kinds of rug pulls do we have, and how do they usually work?
So one of the most frustrating and unfortunately popular is what's called a honeypot. And basically limiting sell orders. And they call it a honeypot because it's kind of an old saying where you leave some honey out and it attracts the flies, and then the flies get trapped in the honey. So basically, in the case of decentralized finance and DeFi, what that means is users buy a token and a few things happen. Maybe they're not able to approve the token for sale on a specific decentralized exchange. So, you know, you go click approve before you sell anything but the native token in MetaMask, and that approval transaction never goes through because of, you know, a purposeful error, so to speak, or a purposeful line of code in the smart contract, and which kind of limits the ability to approve it or send it to anybody after you've bought it. So if you can't approve it, or you can't, you know, send it, that means you can't sell it. So in this case, it means the developers would be the only addresses, the holders of the only addresses, which are quote unquote whitelisted to kind of sell or withdraw the liquidity behind the token, meaning, which we'll get into a little later. So they really wait until users stop buying, and then they kind of remove all the liquidity or sell their entire token allocation, essentially draining all of the liquidity people have invested. And because they can't sell, they kind of helplessly watch as the chart goes red and red candles all the way down until it's worth nothing, which is horribly depressing.
That is crazy. So you just basically, you see your token is there, but you can't really transact or move it anywhere.
Well, and the worst part is it's in your wallet forever because you can't get rid of it. It's just worth nothing.
It's so painful to watch.
Yeah, if you go to the Explorer, it's a traumatic reminder of what was.
I can't do that.
So there's a few other ways that this happens generally. And we're only going to cover a few because it, you know, it could get lengthy if we went through all the ways that they could scam. But we're kind of sticking to the most popular ways that, you know, people will rug. And usually it's some combination of these methods. The second one here being stealing liquidity. So basically, when someone launches a token, they need to give it value so it can be traded for something. And they need to do that wherever they're launching. So usually a decentralized exchange, a DEX, like the Elk DEX, PancakeSwap, or Omni DEX on Talos or something. So it's done by pooling a certain amount of the token in a liquidity pool with a certain amount of a recognized token, usually a native stable, or native or a stable. So this would be a native token like AVAX on the AVAX chain, or BNB on Binance Smart Chain, or Talos on Talos's EVM chain, or a stable coin like DAI, USDC, or USDT. And so they get to set how much each token is worth by how much USDT or AVAX or whatever they pair it with. Mm-hmm. So when people swap the token on the DEX, there's a swap fee that's given to the liquidity provider. In this case, it would be whoever launched it. And any token project has to do this. They have to provide initial liquidity so that people can buy and sell, even if they're legitimate. But if, and of course, as more people trade for the token, the price of the token goes up, and whoever put the most in the pool gets most of those swap fees, usually around 0.25% if it's a Uniswap clone. And what happens is, of course, as people buy and sell, if we've paired AVAX and our scam token, basically, people are paying AVAX and removing the scam token from that pool, getting more of it. And the, in this case, scammers who had launched it are getting more and more, AVAX and less of the token that they paired it with. And if you want more detail on how liquidity works, please check out our episode on liquidity, which was either, I think it was our second episode.
I believe so.
Yeah. So basically, after adding liquidity and they get a bunch of people buying, the buying will eventually slow down. They don't want to risk a lot of people selling. And a lot of these happen within, hours, minutes, and when they see people start to be hesitant or traffic or buys slow down, they don't want people selling. So what they do is they withdraw that pairing that they had put in initially, basically taking everybody's, Avalanche or USDC or whatever out, leaving the token now worthless unless anybody was providing liquidity themselves, usually not, which kind of leaves the unsuspecting victims and investors holding the bag, so to speak.
That is clever.
Yeah, it's simple, but you'd be surprised how often it works. It's
very enticing, because when you get in and you're making a lot of return on it, you just think that this is a way you have to just stay there, just like take advantage of it.
Yeah, and it's kind of appealing to the terrible part of human nature, and it's so easy to do. You just put it in and pair it, and there's not a huge way to, for the scammers, other than getting caught, not much deterring them from doing something like this, because either people buy the token or they don't, so they're willing to take the same liquidity and do it over and over and over again, which is unfortunate. So this leads me to our third way that rugging happens, and this is dumping. So it's slightly different than liquidity stealing. And although it's kind of along the same lines. So let's say, when they provide liquidity, they renounce the liquidity, meaning they send it to a wallet they don't own. Like, let's say the burn address, that's the address OX00000000, a bunch of zeros. And they send the liquidity. When you pair, of course, two tokens, you get like a receipt token, which would be called a liquidity pool token or LP token. They send that LP token to the burn address, So they no longer own it, so they can't actually pull the liquidity. So usually you could see that liquidity there, so the trading can still happen, but they can't pull it out. So this might be a good sign to look for, but it doesn't mean they won't dump, right? So this happens when the scammers may have, renounced this liquidity, but hold the majority of tokens either in their own wallets already, and give just a little bit out it to the liquidity pool so that people can buy and sell it, and they wait, or they wait until there's a ton of buys, and they create more of their tokens, essentially immediately increasing the supply and selling it, devaluing, the worth of the token. Again, kind of leaving investors holding the bag. So you can be on the lookout, as we'll get into, for the amount of tokens minted, and little things to do with the smart contract, that would allow them to mint more of the token. But it's really unfortunate. They can just kind of create as much as they want and dump it on everyone, leaving them
That is
worthless.
insane. So I've heard the terms hard and soft pulls. What does that mean?
So there's hard and soft rug pulls. So basically the difference is to do with the technology and how they do it. I think they're both unethical, and they both in some ways should be illegal. Just one's harder to, it's kind of gets a little gray area. Hard rug pulls occur when, the project developers, they really just code in malicious backdoors or loopholes into their token contract. They're kind of hidden into the smart contract so that at any point they can utilize those to kind of commit fraud, minting more tokens or making the honeypot so that users can't sell, like we mentioned. And the kind of idea is from the beginning to scam people. And this also includes actually jacking liquidity and stealing that initial liquidity. That's also a hard pull, because there's no other reason to do that unless you're scamming when you pull those LP tokens out, and rug everyone that way. Now, the difference with soft rug pulls is really just those people that initially got their assets at some point dump them. And when they have a lot of allocation and they do that all at once, of course, let's say they have 20% of the supply. You dump 20% of the supply, you're not just going to see a 20% drop in price. You're going to see, like a 70 or 80% drop in supply. I don't know exactly the math, but basically then it like completely dive bombs the price, and everyone who's holding it have that devalued token. And the difference here between the hard and soft too is the dumping is, I guess, technically lawfully considered just unethical, but may not be kind of criminal in the same way that that those hard rug pulls are. And I guess we can get into the legality
Yeah,
next.
that's a question comes to my mind, because hard stuff doesn't matter. Are these legal?
You know what, like I feel like there should be, some more clarification around that, and I'm sure there will be. And it's really unfortunate that people do this because it gives crypto a bad rep. Certainly we're not going to see as much crime as there is with fiat currency. That's still the criminal's main mode, but certainly there are creative ways to do it with cryptocurrency. So the hard rug pulls are certainly illegal. Those contracts, like I said, are really designed with those loopholes that demonstrate an intent to rug pull from the beginning. That's illegal. They're planning it, they're going to do it. They pull liquidity. Like I said, there's no other reason to do that unless you're scamming people and you're the only liquidity provider. Think about it. But if you think about developers who kind of sell all of their tokens, I mean, it's not really illegal, but, you know, it can cross over into that territory if they use a token contract loophole, like being allowed to mint their tokens and then dump them. That would be illegal due to them, you know, taking advantage of being able to mint due to the code in the contract that they coded. Actually, like, so many billions of dollars have been made by these kind of bad actors. You know, 7.7 billion, I think, was the stat for 2021. And that's second in terms of years. It was an estimated 9.5 billion in 2019 that was stolen.
That's that I've seen.
Yeah, which surprises me. I thought there would be more in 2021.
Yeah, it's for whatever reason, 2019 was an outlier.
Yeah, which is quite strange, but
But, you know, it's really hard to know what you should do. What do you think we should do, people should do to avoid situations like this?
Well, it's certainly hard because you can do all of the research, but sometimes it still happens. Things like dumping, it's hard to know, but, you know, all of these factors we're going to list, combine them together and take them just as that, a single factor. None of these is going to completely make it safe if it's indeed true or verifiable. But you need to put them all together and there's always going to be some risk, right? You can't be 100% certain with crypto. It's always about doing your own research.
But having said that, I mean, in any investment, you're taking some risk. I mean, no risk, no reward.
That's right. And that's why we're all here. It can be fun. But, I mean, if we do it as safely as we can, you know, we're probably not going to, you know, expose ourselves to more risk than necessary. So, yeah, there's some warning signs. And the first one I want to get into is not having the liquidity locked or renounced. So the difference here, locked refers to put into a contract that usually has a timer that you can see on the blockchain that's public and will expire at some point. And you could see, you know, a little contract icon by a wallet on the Explorer for this, for example. Mm-hmm. Or renounced. Now, renounced is just slightly different, meaning they don't own it anymore. Some tokens do this creatively. They'll send, like I said before, the LP tokens to a burn address, or they'll send it to Vitalik's address because they know his address and they know he's not going to do anything. So sometimes they can be cheeky like that. And you can see that on the Explorer. Or they might take a certain allocation of their tokens and do the same thing with it. And you can see all of this on the blockchain explorers, i.e., you know, BSC scan or, you know, snowtrace.io, that's the Avalanche one, or, you know, so on and so forth, Polygon scan, whatever. But an Ether scan, of course. But of course, this can be, these locks could be faked. That's only one factor. It's not a guarantee, just like the rest of the signs. So you can lock tokens on, Team Locker, for example, on Binance Smart Chain for a small fee. But what you can do actually is go in and set the lock timer for an extremely short period of time, as short as like 5 minutes. So when people look at the Explorer, they see, oh yeah, the liquidity's locked, but really it's only locked for 5 minutes. And even if that 5 minutes expires, it appears to you still on the Explorer that it's in this locked address. Mm-hmm. And so they can just rug you after 5 minutes if they want. Wow. Yeah, and they can get clever. Renouncing liquidity is great, too. This is probably definitely more certain than simply locking up the liquidity. That can't prevent them, if it's in the contract, from minting more tokens and dumping them, like we mentioned earlier. You could, to offset dumping, you could look at the amount of wallets that hold the token, as well as the amounts in each wallet, and making sure that the largest amount of tokens or liquidity appears as a locked contract. But again, you know, it can be completely fake. So yeah, this is just one factor. Honeypot. That's a tricky one. That with this one, again, as a reminder, it's when you buy something and then you can't sell it. So if you're unsure, best check here is spend a couple bucks, like literally $1 or $2, and buy a little of the token and then try to sell it back. Approve it and sell it back. That's one way. We can also use some free tools tools that use a small fee to offer users like an automated scan of a contract. But, you know, sometimes they get it wrong and they can't always tell if the contract owners will dump their allocation of tokens, right? So if a token's new, wait a little bit and resist the FOMO unless you are sure they are safe. FOMO is the biggest thing. When you see a chart going up and up and up, oh, I should have got in.
Yeah.
You know, and that's these honeypots, right? Of course the price goes up because nobody's selling because nobody can. But even looking at the sell orders on a chart, watching to see if there's sells, doesn't always help because sometimes these scammy people, they'll sell a little bit from their own addresses to make it appear that people are selling and that it's safe and it's not a honeypot. They're just a bunch of jerks.
Yeah, you know what? It's really amazing because things are happening so fast that you can get caught in there.
Oh, absolutely.
And I totally see your point that, yeah, you know what? They can have a bunch of tricks in their sleeves and they can just basically scam you.
Absolutely. And they can stay ahead. It's easier to kind of plan the scams than it is to solve them. So, you know, like the others, it's just one factor.
That's right.
Try to avoid tokens that clearly have no use case with a bunch of meme-like names like Floki Doge. That's probably going to be a scam, right? Or ones that have similar names to popular token. If you popular tokens, like if you've seen another elk up there, that's like almost 100%. It's a scam if it doesn't match the elk contract address.
That's a quite common one.
Yeah,
because people typically take the risk because they think that you're going to get a lot of return for it.
Yeah, or they think elk had launched on a new chain and they somehow missed it or something. That. You know, you know, so they'll just try to popularize and count on. These recognizable names. That's why it's really important to verify the contract address of the token that you want to buy. So if you do just want to buy the popular token, make sure you verify that their website's correct, that, you know, check out their social media, make sure, do your own research and make sure that you're buying the right token and the contract address is correct. And that if you ask in the chat that you get the address from an admin, and it's the right, not a scam chat, right? Check those websites. I know there's a bunch of elk scams out there. If you just, you know, check out, search elk finance on Telegram, unfortunately, there's people always trying to scam, which is kind of terrible. Mm-hmm. So always be careful. As we mentioned earlier, check the wallets that hold the tokens. What scammers will do is they'll create a lot of different wallets that holds, you know, let's say a certain amount of the token, or maybe even a varying amount of the tokens that appear to be legitimate holders. This is a tricky one to spot. And what I call it is a waterfall. And I'm not sure if there is a proper term for it, but that's what I've kind of deemed it as. So basically in a waterfall, you'll look at the Explorer and you can kind of see every wallet in order that has an amount of the token in it. And what happens behind the scenes is that the first wallet has a bot that, you know, sends a certain amount of tokens in its wallet to the next wallet, and that wallet sends some to the next wallet, and this bot owns all the addresses, and it just does this on its own, and it's usually a preset amount. And so if you look at it, you can see this like almost like too perfect reducing amount of tokens from the top holder down the list when a token launches, and you can kind of see it just looks fishy because they all have like this like a, you know, a decreasing proportion, and you can kind of see,
not necessarily it can be decreasing. I mean, everything is proportional,
right?
They can have random bots.
It can be, yeah, it can be random, but usually they don't go through the work of that, but they could. So even that does, you're right, it doesn't fully protect you.
Again, I have to highlight this. This is happening so fast.
So fast.
You don't really have the chance to look at the pattern, look at the ratios and figure that out.
Yeah, so like, you know, if you've got a brand new token and you see all these holders suddenly, it's like, okay, hold on. maybe this is fishy. It might be a scam. So make sure the initial coin offering, for example, if there was an initial sale of the token, make sure that they sold, you know, a fair portion of the token that, you know, with these initial coin offerings, people get the chance to buy the token before it's released on the market, which is tricky. So this is probably worth its own episode on ICOs. And, but regardless, make sure that, that's legitimate and that the proportion of tokens they're selling, isn't so high as to, completely dip the price when it launches. So when these tokens, after the initial coin offering, usually you have to get whitelisted or sign up or donate or pay a certain amount, and then you get them, and then, but you can't sell them yet. You're investing in a project, maybe you're hyped for it, but then they go on sale for the public, usually at a higher price. And then the public goes and buys them. And sometimes what happens is these early buyers, you know, have a feeling that the initial price is going to increase. So that might happen. And when it gets to a certain point, a lot of these, you know, early investors who got it at a discount will start dumping their tokens to recover what they, you know, spent and be in profit.
After, yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, you'd want to take a little breath before, you know, buying when a ICO'd coin goes public for everyone to buy. Take a minute and wait, especially if you aren't sure about how much the investors received and what they paid for it. So always kind of check yourself.
Again, this is really, really tricky, you know, because it's not just one factor to look at. You have to look at a variety of these factors and making sure that they are all looking reasonable.
Yeah.
And the definition of reasonable is under question here.
It's true. Like, and because crypto, like, some things are unreasonable. So make sure that you're familiar with the people running the project. You kind of know who they are. Maybe you've seen them somewhere else, that you can verify they're associated with another project. Maybe they have a history with a certain project. Even better if they're doxed and not anonymous. You know, anything you can to check if they're legit. What are they saying in the chat? Is it all hype? Like the Telegram, oh my gosh, Moon, like this is going to be amazing. Oh yeah, for sure. Oh, this is going to be great. This is so necessary. If you're not seeing any FUD, fear, uncertainty, doubt in a chat, that could be a bad sign, especially if a token just launched and you can have people pretending to be investors.
Yeah, you know what? Sometimes it's really interesting. You go through some of these chats and it's just like, this doesn't make any sense.
It's so ridiculous. Maybe they're banning people who are asking legitimate questions or have concerns. Get out of there right away. You know, does it seem scripted? Are they just posting similar things over and over and over again? Time to go. Get out of there.
Yeah, and sometimes the answer to legitimate questions is just like so vague and so unrelated.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's just like, what?
A bunch of buzzwords that don't make sense, right?
So, yeah, so that's the most familiar one to me.
Totally. So, like, let's say this unfamiliar token just launched and the price is, like, going to the moon. Look, take a minute. Watch out. Like, the developers could actually be buying their own token to make it look like the price is increasing quickly, getting them to the top of the charts on, you know, a tracker like Moonark or something. They're kind of maybe waiting for legitimate users to have that feeling of missing out, that FOMO, and buy. And so then they kind of catch their liquidity in the pool, and when they pull it or dump it or decide to scam. Another thing is ridiculous farming rewards. If you've got 100,000% APRs, that's a sure sign that something's going to happen, especially if when the first person puts in, it's still somewhere up there at 100,000%. Something unsustainable is happening. This just is impossible. There isn't that much money to go around. So
I think that's a rule zero of any investment.
Mm-hmm.
When it is too good to be true, it's too good to be true.
That's true. So, yeah, if the APR appears high and doesn't go down right away, it's probably unsustainable. So just wait it out. You know, take a minute, see what people are saying, and you know, figure that out. Another thing to do here is to look for audits. Look for audits from recognizable companies like, you know, Paladin or Certec, or something like that. But, you know, even that isn't always a guarantee.
That was my question, actually.
Yeah.
If somebody audited and just basically put their name on it, can I trust it?
Yeah, so Certec, for example, or Paladin, you know, you go to their website and you can see that they've actually audited the project. So anyone can claim that somebody audited their project, but go to the website of the auditor, make sure that auditor is legitimate. You'll get to know them in the space and which ones are legitimate. And, you know, make sure that they've actually done the audit and that the results are the same. You know, or read the report. Is it high risk? Is it not? Is it low risk? Are there small kind of problems with it? That's fine. But even so, even when these companies spend a long time working on it, companies are made of people, right? And professionals make mistakes. So, you know, even companies like Rugdoc will, you know, verify the identities of the developers privately, and they'll even kind of, you know, have them in a video call, pair it with some identification, do their best to make sure that the individual is legitimate, look at other factors on the internet, and agree to maybe report them to the authorities if they do scam users, which is helpful, but fake IDs do exist, and, you know, you can put stuff on the internet that isn't true.
That's pretty true. Yeah.
And they can always make it look like, you know, they were scammed or didn't know, or, you know, that it wasn't on purpose. So just be a little skeptical.
I don't know why I have a feeling that this is going to be my first step for checking.
Yeah.
Because, you know, yeah, you know what? I have a reasonable confidence that this can be true. And after that, I can go through the rest of the checklist you were talking about.
For sure. And yeah, that's basically what it sums up to is doing your own research, right? Yeah. And that's all of these things. These are some factors you can check. There's more. But basically, if your gut says something's fishy, get out of there. Listen to it, right? There's been a huge increase in scam incidents and rug pulls exponentially over the last 9 years. And they're becoming really increasingly easy to do. You can find probably YouTube videos showing you how to do these things. So be careful. There's usually not a lot of time to get out when you realize that it might be a scam. For example, in 2020, the average length of a scam project lasted 192 days on average. So that means, I mean, obviously some were hours, but some were, you know, even much, much longer, hundreds of days. And in 2021, that amount, the length of a scam dropped to just 70 days. So a lot more quick rug pulls. And those are just the ones that are tracked. There is definitely so many on that are launching every day that don't make enough to probably show up on the radar.
That's right.
But to put it in perspective, in 2013, the average was over maybe just over 2,000 days of how long a project would last before they would rug or do something fishy if they were going to. So it went from 2,000 days length down to, you know, 70 days, and a great deal of those are super quick. So, for example, Thodex was a Turkish centralized exchange, and the CEO just straight up disappeared and kind of disabled all the withdrawals for all the users and ran away with $2 billion.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was a great deal of the 2021 scam revenue. That total.
That is crazy.
Yeah, insane. There's some questions around the Quadriga CX scam, which was a Canadian, you know, service where the, you know, CEO supposedly died and lost the private keys, but mm-hmm. Something fishy is going on there, I tell you. Anubis DAO was actually the second biggest in 2021. They were valued at $58 million. They kind of got some initial deposits of wrapped Ethereum to the DAO, and they basically just ran off with it. You know, so to check out some of these things, you can check out Rekt News. That's RekT.news, and they kind of update you on a lot of info about fishy happenings, as well as rug pulls that are big enough to kind of make headlines if you're kind of curious about some of these things.
That is fascinating. I think, you know what, they are using the sense of urgency and a sense of getting into investment to pull people in and just take their tokens and just walk away.
Yeah.
So the question right now comes to my mind is, so they got your tokens. How do they do it?
So
what do they do with it?
Well, basically, when they get your tokens, they get these, you know, this liquidity that they pull, or, you know, what they sold it for, or they've got to get out somehow, because you could easily track on the blockchain where it went.
Exactly. That's the kind of a knowledge we have. I can see where it's going.
Yeah. And so a lot of these people use protocols like Tornado Cash. And how that works, and there's many forks of this around, and it does have legitimate uses for people who are concerned about privacy. So it's not just used for people, you know, scamming other people. You know, there is a use case, though, you know, count on people to make a use case malicious, right? So basically what Tornado Cash does is it mixes up the transactions with funds of other people who are also using the service. So basically, these scammers would deposit funds into Tornado Cash. They get a randomly generated key on the spot, and then it deposits the ERC tokens into a smart contract. And you'll need that key later to retrieve the tokens from the smart contract. And because it's been mixed up, and you can withdraw any amount at any time, and it's not visible who took what from the smart contract when and what address and what amount was linked to the other amount, other than this, you know, it's verified completely decentralized and verified independently. So there's no way for anyone to know which, you know, key, what the key even looks like and how much it was. They could see the deposit, but they wouldn't be able to see which address took how much. So you can just take little bits out with that key to a new wallet minus a fee.
Fascinating.
Yeah, ensuring nobody can trace it. Yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. You know what? It was very, very interesting topic, actually. And the same as any other episodes we had before, it's about making sure that you do your research and you understand what you're getting into, and you're not betting something you can't afford to lose.
Yeah, for sure. And so we really appreciate you guys listening. Wanted to give a shout out to chainanalysis.com and cointelegraph.com regarding their articles on rug pulls and scams, which are a pretty interesting read. So maybe check it out after you're done listening.
And yeah, for those people who are interested to look at the stats and how things are changing through time, that would be a great resource.
Absolutely. So again, we appreciate you guys joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.